Welcome into my podcast with Derek Gould, who covers the St. Louis Cardinals and also has written a book and a follow-up book, 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And he really dove into the numbers and the history of some of the great players and moments in Cardinals baseball. Also, some things for you as a fan on what you should do in following the Cardinals. You might be going to spring training or what you do around the ballpark. If you love Cardinals baseball, I think you're going to love this visit and you would love the book. It's really, really well written and a walk down memory lane for some and learning new history for others. This is presented by Lordo's Diamonds. Reminder that with Mother's Day right around the corner, or if you have that special event in your life, think Lordo's Diamonds for the one you love. Lordo's Diamonds, located in the heart of Ladue, 9222 Clayton Road, 9222 Clayton Road. And you can also see their selection at lordosdiamonds.com. You mention the website, you mention my name, you'll get even more money off your purchase at Lordo's Diamonds. We're coming to you from the Louvre Hughes Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. And this is also presented by Hair Salon for Men, Schnucks, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, and the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly. It's a long visit with Derek Gould, so sit back, take it in. It's a lot of fun. I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the book, 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Derek put it together. A lot of research and effort went into the book. The foreword on the first one by Stan the Man. This one, the new edition with Adam Wainwright. So we'll get into that and so much more of Cardinals history in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
My guest will be Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who covers the Cardinals day in and day out, also noted author. A book that came out a few years ago called 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. The foreword then was by Stan the Man. The book has been updated with a foreword from Adam Wainwright. And Derek Gould is my guest. I'm Dan McLaughlin of Fox Sports Midwest. I have read, Derek, a number of these books, and I understand that the book and the series that came out, a lot of the beat writers were asked to do the books for their particular series, and I'm going to give you a lot of credit. I've read all of them, and some of them were like, hey, make sure you go get a hot dog at this hot dog stand. You didn't do it that way. You did it with a lot of research and putting a lot of effort and time into trying to figure out some of the unique aspects of the history of this club.
It was the first time that I was kind of given the wheel to a book. I'd been a part of or written other books that were kind of governed by editors or sort of targeted on one specific topic, like, you know, a while back wrote on some college football stuff and everything like that. But here was someone handing me the wheel to a book with somewhat of a general guideline. There had been some brief history. There had been one of these 100 things done before, and they wanted to branch out into a whole, you know, all 30 teams, all football teams, all that stuff. And they were trying to figure out how to do that. So they gave me the one that had been done. And then the late Nick Cafardo, longtime Boston Globe baseball writer, he and I were working on sort of the next step in that group. So there really wasn't a roadmap at all for how to handle it. And we were given a chance to kind of make it our own. And I went in thinking, all right, well, what can I write that is revelatory about Cardinal history? What can I point people towards that, you know, that maybe they don't know about the sort of Cardinal geography? And how do I mix those two things? And, you know, given the chance to kind of write the first book on my own, I wanted to see what I could do. It was a good challenge. It took me probably a little longer than the editors wanted, to be candid. But it was rewarding too, because what it did is it allowed me to not just dip my toe into Cardinal history, but kind of wade in it and swim around in it and tread water in it and find new depths of it. And that's given me such an appreciation that, or really has broadened and enriched my appreciation for the history, but also gave me a chance to tell maybe new tales that even the casual fan didn't know. And I'm told it's a good bathroom read.
Well, it's better than that. I'll tell you this. It was interesting. I'm sure you went back through the Post-Dispatch archives, mm-hmm. and maybe the Globe Democrat or yep. wherever you could find it. But then you did your due diligence then in reading those articles, and for those that were still alive to tell the tales, to reconfirm them and maybe add to them.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that you talk about, like when you do a book, is secondary and primary reporting. Secondary is like you're talking about getting from magazines, getting from websites, getting from archives. And then primary is where you are directly involved in the interview process. You know, there were some things that had been repeated so often that they became lore or became fact, and I wanted to track those down.
Which ones came to mind when you think about, well, that was said a lot probably on the broadcast, old Danny Mac just spewing lies. Which ones came to fruition that you thought were, you know, ones that you really wanted to follow up on?
One of the stories that I heard a lot about was Enos Slaughter, and obviously it was well told how often, you know, or how emotional he was when he was traded from the Cardinals to the Yankees and how much the Cardinals meant to him. But it was often said that, you know, that he was so profoundly fond of being a Cardinal that he was buried in his Cardinal jersey or with his Cardinal rings. And
I told that story, by the way, at Wrigley Field to Tim McCarver, and he was floored. But go ahead.
Yeah. So it, and you know, I mean, it swirled around so much so that it, like I said, it became kind of an urban legend.
Right.
Is it actually true? Is that actually what happened? And in doing this book, it was like, all right, well, here's a chance to set out and try to find out that answer and find somebody who knows for sure whether it's true and then tell the backstory of it. And it took a while, you know, it took a while to kind of pull the thread and to find the right people and to exchange emails with the right members of the family and then uncover maybe some details that people had hoped would be private, you know, and you're asking like an uncomfortable question, but I felt like it's been told so many times that, you know, finding the truth of it would be good.
And the answer is?
He is.
That's right.
You know, and in the book, it tells not only that he is, but who supplied the jersey and what kind of jersey it is.
In trying to come up with 100 of these, and you probably could have done 1,000 of them, you know, 1,000 things at least that Cardinal fans should know and do before they die. How did you break it down to 100?
Well, you know, one of the things was it's things to know, fans should know and do. So I had to really make it pay attention to what should they do. I could write 100 things that they should know, and you could write 100 anecdotes plucked from, you know, more than a century of history and say, here's the guy who hit this, or here's the game that did this, or here's the seat cushions that were thrown here, or here's the home, you know, that was stolen by Glenn Brummer there. But I also had to fix in some do's. And so I tried to make sure that as many things as I put in there from history, that I tried to lace in things that they could actually do and maybe tie those to history as well. I also wanted to sort of explore, you know, some maybe uncelebrated moments in history, or at least moments that maybe should get more attention, like Cy Young throwing the first pitch for the Perfectos. You know, opening day, Cy Young is, I mean, you could argue that Cardinal history began with a pitch by Cy Young.
That's right.
And I wanted to make that case in the book. So I wanted to do things like that. And you're right. I mean, finding that balance, I'm sure I could write the book 100 times and come up with 100 different ways. I will say that there's like little Easter eggs in there for why the numbers of like every chapter has a number right at 1 through 100. And there are little Easter eggs for, you know, each one as to why that number gets that topic or why that chapter is that topic. You know, some of them are obvious, like the World Series years. Some of them are a little bit, you know, more like insider, kind of a wink. But I wanted to have fun with it, too.
I thought you did a great job with it. We'll take a quick timeout, then we'll get into some of these really unique stories. If you love Cardinals history, Derek Gould has the book out. It's been re-released. 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Back with more in just a moment. Are you ready for the boys of summer? Well, pull up a front row seat at Hot Shots Sports Bar and Grill for all the Cardinals action this season at one of their 11 area locations. During every Cardinals game, you can enjoy the new Hot Shots Triple Play Special featuring a large pizza, order of boneless wings, and a bucket of Bud Family bottles, available for a great price. Also, be sure to join the party on the last Tuesday of each month this season for Hot Shots Ticket Tuesday and your shot to score a pair of tickets to an upcoming game. Don't forget to score $1 Hot Shots Tacos any day after the Cardinals score 8 or more runs. Hot Shots, proud home of Cardinal fans since 1990. Your home for all the games, all the time. Find a Hot Shots location near you. HotShotsNet.com. I want to get into some of the Hall of Famers that you wrote about, and I'm going to start with the late, great Red Schoendienst.
Yeah, so I'm lucky to have actually spent time with him, but we began by talking about some of the urban legends that grow up around the Cardinals. Certainly, Red has his share of them, too. You know, the sleeping on the park bench when during his tryout and everything. So I was able to sit at the new ballpark with him, actually, for quite a while. We just sat in the stands, I guess, during BP.
That's awesome.
And he told me the story, you know, sort of the Red origin story. And it was nice to revisit it. And then for the new edition to go back and realize that when I wrote it for the first time, I didn't do a good enough job of capturing how good a player he was. You know, I felt
like... It often gets overlooked.
Yeah, I felt like when I wrote it, I kind of catered to the whole, lifetime with the Cardinals and, roommate of Musial and, you know, manager and everything like that. And I kind of, I hit all
and
the right...
And a fill-in for Stan at one point.
That's right. I hit all the notes. You know, I hit all the notes that you're supposed to. You know, I did my checklist. But I realized that, like, look, I need to do a better job of capturing what he was like as a player. What was the skills and what was the performances and what was the production and what was the career that got him elected to the Hall of Fame? And so in going back into this book and writing basically an in memoriam for him and updating what I was able to do that. I was able to expand the discussion of Red and take a deeper look at his playing career.
I thought it was amazing. The great quote, "We played mostly baseball as kids, a lot of ragball. And when we saw that ad, we thought, let's try it out," said Red Schoendienst. "I just wanted to see about it, see if I could play. I guess they saw something in me." And then Musial said, quote, "Besides Jackie Robinson, to your point, Derek, for 10 or 15 years there, Red was the best second baseman in the league." End quote. "I had a night with Red, an evening with the Cardinals that I put on, and Red was there. And we got into when he was a young man, a wire staple in his left eye as a teenager, had double vision, and then tuberculosis that he dealt with, which would sap his energy, could have had multiple batting titles. An amazing, amazing player."
Yeah, and even then, like when he returned from tuberculosis, too, one of the more gifted second basemen, you know, that had people... when he was with the Milwaukee Braves and helped put that together, kind of the glue that brought that team together and made it a championship contender. They were raved about how he played at that point in time. Just a savvy baseball player.
We're going to talk now about Lou Brock, and everybody knows the trade that brought Lou Brock to the Cardinals and the catalyst of 1964 and getting them to the World Series and winning it over the Yankees. But what did you find out about Lou that maybe you didn't know about Lou Brock?
I was really struck by the fact, I think it's a story that's been well told, but the way Lou tells it and trying to capture the tone in which he tells it about, you know, Johnny Keene, right, saying, "Look, you're going to steal. That's what you're here for." I'm recalling this right, like the meeting where they had, "Look, we need a guy like this, and you're going to be that guy." And Lou trying to process this idea that, like, you know, and we see guys actually kind of, it's a story that tells itself over and over again, right? Even talking to Colton Wong somewhat this year, you hear echoes of it as well, where he's like, "Well, what kind of player can I be? Well, the game says hit for power. The game says do damage. The game says you'll get paid if you drive in all these runs." And here was this guy being told, "Look, you got to steal. Go out there and steal." And he's like, "Wait a minute, no, I want to hit home runs. I want to be that kind of ball player. I want to be the ball player that strikes fear in the opposing team." And the decision was like, okay, we can try to be that guy and not stick around, or you can steal and have a long career. And, you know, Lou Brock ran his way all the way to the Hall of Fame. I like that story that you can see how baseball repeats itself in some ways, but also like the idea that Lou found a calling when he was told this is what you have to do. I think there's a quaintness to it, and he tells it so well. I'm failing in in recounting it, but I wanted to write, when I wrote it, I was like, all right, I need to try to capture the spirit in which, you know, Lou tells it, which is like a mix of bemusement, a mix of frustration, and then a mix of exhilaration finally towards the end. It's like a little small three-act play in the clubhouse.
Inside Cardinals Nation, my guest Derek Gould, 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. This segment, we're talking about some of the Cardinals Hall of Famers and unique stories with them. And I think about Bruce Sutter. There was a interesting quote that you had in this. He said, the Hall of Fame, quote, brought closure to a baseball career that did not end how and when I had always hoped it would. I believe he retired, forced to retire in 1988 because of shoulder issues. Number 42, though, is retired. Quote, the call answered a question that had been ongoing for 13 years. A question, quite frankly, I would ask myself every year, do you belong? I find that really interesting into the man's soul a little bit, because when I talk to him, I hear that. But
yeah,
to me, his pitch redefined the game, and he was dominant. He had 300 saves, closed out a World Series, ironically enough, with a fastball against Gorman Thomas,
yeah,
not the split finger. But Bruce Sutter is such an interesting guy.
Yeah, really, and in that role, too. I mean, you're talking about the early days of sort of the monster closer, right? I mean, you know, helping to define – you know, in every way, like what Mariano Rivera is for the closers of today, Sutter was for the closers right before Mariano Rivera. I mean, a guy who had a pitch that was so good and so difficult to deal with and spread as people tried to duplicate it, tried to replicate it. So a lot like Rivera's cutter. And then in a role where, you know, you've worked with the Matt Hungarian, there's some theatrics to that role. There's some drama to
the
closer role. And for people of a certain age, ball players of a certain age, Sutter was the shutdown closer that defined it.
I find this very interesting with Tony La Russa, and I've told this now, he's a Hall of Famer, and we're talking about the Hall of Famers here. When Bob Gibson said to him as he won the 2006 World Series, welcome to the club, that solidified him as a Cardinal.
So that is a story, and I'm sure you were in the same spot as me, that I had been told by Tony multiple times before they won a World Series. This was definitely on his mind, that he was not quite a Cardinal until he had. He would talk about, I have a ring, but not the ring. You need to be a Cardinal, you need to have the ring. You know, he would talk about how, you know, you had the guys like Gibson and you had the guys like Brock and Musial was around, and they had the ring, the world championship ring. And then, you know, they win 2006, and he's walking into his room. And so it was like, it was an interesting thing, because you got to see the story play out in real time as it was on his mind in 04, as it was on his mind again in 05, as, you know, that 06 team kind of comes together and gels and then goes on to win, how he had resolution to it.
Absolutely. And again, my guest, Derek Gould, the book, 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And the final Hall of Famer I'll ask you about that's in the book, and these are all unique stories behind the names, is Ozzie Smith. And you mentioned all the Hall of Famers in here, but I'm just going through some of them. Ozzie.
Possibly future Hall of Famers.
That's right. Ozzie, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2002, number retired in 1996. And known really as the greatest defensive shortstop of all time, 15-time All-Star, 13 Gold Gloves, and those were consecutive that he won. What stood out when you dug in on Ozzie Smith?
I think, you know, the origin story of, you know, his how he became such a gifted fielder, you know, gifted athlete, obviously, great eye-hand coordination, all that stuff, you know, and then the glove made out of a paper bag, and, you know, the games that he would play as a kid working on, or, you know, that created this great fielder, even though at the time he was just having fun, right? And then how the craftsman kind of took over, you know, the real merge of great skill and then great instinct and intellect that goes into that position. I thought those were the things that, you know, when talking to him and looking through his career, I thought that's what really stood out. Is like, look, this is a guy who, you know, we talk about hitters and we talk about pitchers. We talk about the, you know, they take these raw skills and they add understanding And that's when they're at their best. You know, you think about like, oh, well, you know, Ted Williams obviously thought so much about hitting and was this master craftsman at the plate. And then you think about Greg Maddux and, oh, the professor on the mound, he's outsmarting people. We probably don't say that enough about defensive players, but we ought to about Ozzie Smith. Here was a guy who had, you know, gave a master's class in preparation to play defense, who gave a master's class in how to compensate maybe when he wasn't feeling all that great to still play great defense. Here was a guy who knew his home field and all of its hops better than, you know, some of us know our fingerprints. I was really struck by, like, we got to look at Ozzie Smith as a glove man in the same way that we look at Musial as a hitter, Williams as a hitter, you know, Maddux as a pitcher.
We're going to talk about some of the numbers that define the St. Louis Cardinals: Hornsby, Gibson, Carlton, and Brock. That's next. 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, written by Derek Gould. We're back with more in a moment.
Hey, St. Louis, it's Matt Carpenter. The most rewarding thing for me is to be able to play in front of the best fans in baseball. A close second is the Snooks Rewards app, because it simplifies my shopping. It helps me organize my shopping list by easily finding items that are organic, heart-healthy, whatever I'm looking for. There is also a really cool feature that helps you locate items in the store. So when you're looking for my salsa, just type in Mojo Salsa and the app will tell you where to find it. Simplify shopping. Download the Snooks Rewards app today.
I want to get into some of the Hall of Famers that you wrote about, and I'm going to start with the late, great Red Schoendienst.
Yeah, so I'm lucky to have actually spent time with him, but we began by talking about some of the urban legends that grow up around the Cardinals. Certainly Red has his share of them too, you know, the sleeping on the park bench during his tryout and everything. So I was able to sit at the new ballpark with him actually for quite a while. We just sat in the stands, I guess, during BP.
That's awesome.
And he told me the story, you know, sort of the Red origin story, and it was nice to revisit it. And then for the new edition, to go back and realize that when I wrote it for the first time, I didn't do a good enough job of capturing how good a player he was. You know, I felt
like...
It often
gets overlooked.
Yeah, I felt like when I wrote it, I kind of catered to the whole, you know, lifetime with the Cardinals and, you know, roommate of Musial and, you know, manager and everything like that. And I kind of, I hit all
and
the right...
fill in for Stan at one point.
That's right. I hit all the notes. You know, I hit all the notes that you're supposed to. You know, I did my checklist. But I realized that, like, look, I need to do a better job of capturing what he was like as a player. What was the skills and what was the performances and what was the production and what was the career that got him elected to the Hall of Fame? And so in going back into this book and writing basically an in memoriam for him and updating what I was able to do that. I was able to expand the discussion of Red and take a deeper look at his playing career.
I thought it was amazing. The great quote, "We played mostly baseball as kids, a lot of ragball. And when we saw that ad, we thought, let's try it out," said Red Schoendienst. "I just wanted to see about it, see if I could play. I guess they saw something in me." And then Musial said, quote, "Besides Jackie Robinson," to your point, Derek, "for 10 or 15 years there, Red was the best second baseman in the league." End quote. "I had a night with Red, an evening with the Cardinals that I put on, and Red was there. And we got into when he was a young man, a wire staple in his left eye as a teenager,
yeah,
had double vision, and then tuberculosis that he dealt with, which would sap his energy, could have had multiple batting titles. An amazing, amazing player."
Yeah, and even then, like when he returned from tuberculosis too, one of the more gifted second basemen, you know, that had people when he was with the Milwaukee Braves and helped put that together, kind of the glue that brought that team together and made it a championship contender. You know, they were raved about how he played at that point in time. Just a savvy baseball player.
We're going to talk now about Lou Brock, and everybody knows the trade that brought Lou Brock to the Cardinals and the catalyst of 1964 and getting them to the World Series and winning it over the Yankees. But what did you find out about Lou that maybe you didn't know about Lou Brock?
I was really struck by the fact, like, I think it's a story that's been well told, but the way Lou tells it and trying to capture the tone in which he tells it, about, you know, Johnny Keene, right, saying, look, you're going to steal. That's what you're here for. You know, I believe I'm recalling this right, like the meeting where they had, look, we need a guy like this, and you're going to be that guy. And Lou trying to process this idea that, like, you know, and we see guys actually kind of, it's a story that tells itself over and over again, right? Even talking to Colton Wong somewhat this year, you hear echoes of it as well, where he's like, well, what kind of player can I be? Well, the game says hit for power. The game says do damage. The game says you'll get paid if you drive in all these runs. And here was this guy being told, look, you got to steal. Go out there and steal. And he's like, wait a minute. No, I want to hit home runs. I want to be that kind of ball player. I want to be the ball player that strikes fear in the opposing team. And the decision was like, okay, we can try to be that guy and not stick around, or you can steal and have a long career. And, you know, Lou Brock ran his way all the way to the Hall of Fame. I like that story that, you know, that you can see how baseball repeats itself in some ways, but also like the idea that Lou found a calling when he was told, this is what you have to do. I think there's a quaintness to it. And he tells it so well. I'm failing in recounting it, but I wanted to write, when I wrote it, I was like, all right, I need to try to capture the spirit in which, you know, Lou tells it, which is like a mix of bemusement, a mix of frustration, and then a mix of exhilaration finally towards the end. It's like a little small three-act play in the clubhouse.
Inside Cardinals Nation, my guest Derek Gould, 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. This segment we're talking about some of the Cardinals Hall of Famers and unique stories with them. And I think about Bruce Sutter. There was a interesting quote that you had in this. He said, the Hall of Fame, quote, brought closure to a baseball career that did not end how and when I had always hoped it would. I believe he retired, forced to retire in 1988 because of shoulder issues. Number 42, though, is retired. Quote, the call answered a question that had been ongoing for 13 years. A question, quite frankly, I would ask myself every year, do you belong? I find that really interesting into the man's soul a little bit, because when I talk to him, I hear that. But
yeah,
to me, his pitch redefined the game, and he was dominant. He had 300 saves, closed out a World Series, ironically enough, with a fastball against Gorman Thomas, not the split finger. But Bruce Sutter is such an interesting guy.
Yeah, really, and in that role, too. I mean, you're talking about the early days of sort of the monster closer, right? I mean, you know, helping to define, you know, in every way, like what Mariano Rivera is for the closers of today, Sutter was for the closers right before Mariano Rivera. I mean, a guy who had a pitch that was so good and so difficult to deal with and spread as people tried to duplicate it, tried to replicate it. So a lot like Rivera's cutter. And then in a role where, you know, you've worked with the Mad Hungarian, there are some theatrics to that role. There are some drama to the closer role. And for people of a certain age, ball players of a certain age, Sutter was the shutdown closer that defined it.
I find this very interesting with Tony La Russa, and I've told this now, he's a Hall of Famer, and we're talking about the Hall of Famers here. When Bob Gibson said to him as he won the 2006 World Series, welcome to the club, that solidified him as a Cardinal.
So that is a story, and I'm sure you were in the same spot as me, that I had been told by Tony multiple times before they won a World Series. This was definitely on his mind that he was not quite a Cardinal until he had. He would talk about, I have a ring, but not the ring. You need to be a Cardinal, you need to have the ring. You know, he would talk about how, you know, you had the guys like Gibson and you had the guys like Brock and Musial was around and they had the ring, the world championship ring. And then, you know, they win 2006 and he's walking into his room. And so it was like, it was an interesting thing because you got to see the story play out in real time as it was on his mind in 04, as it was on his mind again in 05, as, you know, that 06 team kind of comes together and gels and then goes on to win, how he had resolution to it.
Absolutely. And again, my guest, Derek Gould, the book, 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And the final Hall of Famer I'll ask you about that's in the book, and these are all unique stories behind the names is Ozzie Smith. And you mentioned all the Hall of Famers in here, but I'm just going through some of them. Ozzie.
Possibly future Hall of Famers.
That's right. Ozzie inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2002, number retired in 1996, and known really as the greatest defensive shortstop of all time, 15-time All-Star, 13 Gold Gloves, and those were consecutive that he won. What stood out when you dug in on Ozzie Smith?
I think, you know, the origin story of, you know, his, how he became such a gifted fielder, you know, gifted athlete, obviously, great eye-hand coordination, all that stuff, you know, and then the glove made out of a paper bag and, you know, the games that he would play as a kid working on, or, you know, that created this great fielder, even though at the time he was just having fun, right? And then how the craftsman kind of took over, you know, the real merge of great skill and then great instinct and intellect that goes into that position. I thought those were the things that, you know, in talking to him and looking through his career, I thought that's what really stood out is like, look, this is a guy who, you know, we talk about hitters and we talk about pitchers. We talk about the, you know, they take these raw skills and they add understanding, and that's when they're at their best. You know, you think about like, oh, well, you know, Ted Williams obviously thought so much about hitting and was this master craftsman at the plate. And then you think about Greg Maddux and, oh, the professor on the mound, he's outsmarting people. We probably don't say that enough about defensive players, but we ought to about Ozzie Smith. Here was a guy who had, you know, gave a master's class in preparation to play defense, who gave a master's class in how to compensate maybe when he wasn't feeling all that great to still play great defense. Here was a guy who knew his home field and all of its hops better than, you know, some of us know our fingerprints. I was really struck by, like, we got to look at Ozzie Smith as a gloveman in the same way that we look at Musial as a hitter, Williams as a hitter, you know, Maddux as a pitcher.
We're going to talk about some of the numbers that define the St. Louis Cardinals: Hornsby, Gibson, Carlton, and Brock. That's next. 100 Things Cardinal Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, written by Derek Gould. We're back with more in a moment. Hair Salon for Men, proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Home base in St. Louis, founded in 1997. 16 locations. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. And for an extra $5, get a stress-relieving scalp massage. Hair Salon for Men, 16 locations. There's one near you. Hair Salon for Men. My guest is Derek Gould, 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Derek has written a follow-up to the original book, and now it includes some of the newer stories, but if you love Cardinals history, it truly is a walk down memory lane. We've talked about the Hall of Famers, destination spots, and now some of the numbers that define the St. Louis Cardinals. And I'm going to go with Rogers Hornsby and the average of 424.
Amazing. Probably a player who, for the modern generation, the best way to put it is he was the first Albert Pujols the team had. You know,
it's a good way to put it.
All the things that Albert Pujols did as a first baseman, you know, third base, left field, all that. What Albert Pujols did in his first decade with the Cardinals, Roger Hornsby did all of that before him.
We probably don't talk about it enough, do we? Maybe because we're just so far removed from it, I guess.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, one of the best right-handed hitters the game has ever seen, a guy who had a decade triple crown, like Albert Pujols, in the sense that he, for an entire decade, led the National League in average home runs and RBIs.
So amazing.
Had the decade triple crown. I think, you know, a remarkable player, probably because he didn't spend all of his career with the Cardinals, maybe.
Right.
I think also, you know, there's a logo retired for him, not a number that's retired for him. So some of these things that are very modern in our sensibility, like, oh, we see a number retired, we think of that player and that number. Whereas you see a logo out there, you don't think, well, that logo belongs to a player. You think more a logo belongs to a team. So, you know, but I do think that, you know, true to Cardinals history, that there's probably not a Cardinals fan that doesn't know there's an S on the end of Rogers, right? I mean, that's something
that's right.
You probably learned by the by the time you graduate, you know, elementary school or move on from elementary school, that Rodgers has an S on the end of it. But but his feats offensively were remarkable, overshadowed in his era by a guy named Babe Ruth, but no less of a remarkable right-handed hitter than the game has ever seen.
Bob Gibson in 1.12.
Yeah, the 50th anniversary of it was not too long ago, right? And, you know, the number that redefined the game, right, that changed the rules.
Did you talk to Bob about it?
I did. I talked to Bob about it in the scope of a larger interview where we spent time together at spring training and then again at Busch Stadium briefly for different topics on it. You know, he's very good at talking to Commish, Rick Hummel at the Post Dispatch about the ins and outs of that number.
I did a long interview with him. It's on the website.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's not that he doesn't want to talk about it, but he says many people forget that year how many other pitchers had great numbers and mine just happened to be the best.
He in talking with him, one of the things, and I, you know, one of the things he brought up was how could have been, I want to make sure I get this right, and he may have shared this sentiment with you as well, that he could have had a better season and had a higher ERA. And his point is that there were times where, and he makes a joke about it, right? Like, you know, I couldn't give up, I had to give up zero runs because we were only going to score one run, and that was the only way I could win. And he had so many games in there where he gave up one run and they would lose. So I think his point was that there were times where that season would have looked different given on the run support or had he, you know, done some things in the games he lost.
Yeah.
And that the ERA might have been a bit higher, but he would have had a better season overall, if that makes sense. Though
no
it's
question.
Hard to imagine anyone being more dominant. I mean, we haven't seen a pitcher be that dominant. I know that was the year of the pitcher. You know, in which Pedro Martinez had a really strong year that stood out compared to all of his peers. But I still think, like, to the point that Gibson was making that a lot of guys had low ERA, he still had to do it. You know, yeah, there was a lot of pitching performances that year, and yes, there were a lot of big numbers as far as pitchers go that year. But he still had to stand above the group in that year. And I think that's fitting. In a way, you know, in a year when pitching was good all around, he was still elite. And to me, that puts his whole career in context.
Yeah.
At a time when pitching was good and the game was bending towards a pitching direction, it was him that helped change the rules. And it was still him that stood head and shoulders above his peers.
Steve Carlton's 19. So he strikes out 19 in a game in September 15th of 1969.
Right. So another guy, you know, remarkably not linked to the Cardinals. And I wonder why. Like, I don't.
I'll disagree with you to a point. I think he's gotten more recognition now than he did before. And I say that because, for instance, I've brought him back for a couple of events to talk to fans in St. Louis, which he had not done before. I'll pull back the curtain here a little bit. Jim Hayes went to get him on the reunion teams that we've had. He's here. He's back in town. And yep. Tim McCarver was with me. And this is a unique story. Jim went to go get him to put him on the air with us. And he says to Jim, he says, you know, I don't do these things. And he said, I know. And he said, it sounds like I'm giving myself a pat on the back, but he said, who's it with? He said, it'll be with Dan and Tim. And he said, that's the only two guys I'll go on the air with.
Oh, well, makes sense.
And it, you know, because he's got a comfort level with us. We've been out to dinner with him. Tim and Steve obviously are very close,
right.
But he trusts me too. And I'm proud of that. And so to have him back, I want him back in the family. I think it's important, and I say that about Keith Hernandez as well. You know, we don't link him as much to the Cardinals and great numbers that he had in 79 winning the MVP and maybe the best defensive first baseman of all time. But, you know, back to the 19 strikeouts that you wrote about, and then how he haunted the Cardinals once he was traded away.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff.
Oh, my gosh. He was so successful against the Cardinals, not just in the sense of what could have happened had he stuck around, you know, had he not had the contract issue and forced his way out. But, you know, how good could that – I mean, would you have been talking about – a dynasty, probably, right? I mean, a left-right combo
Jerry
that would
Royce
have carried
too.
Forever. You wouldn't have had the dead zone of the 70s for the Cardinals. You probably would have had more years of contention there. And then, of course, he's one of the reasons behind the elevation of a rival to success in that era. So,
do you know also in that story, which has been talked about and written about, the difference in money, that he was walking down to accept in the hallway the deal?
So
he told me that, and he had not said that publicly, but he told me that he said, I finally had come to the conclusion I'll agree to the deal with the Bush family, and he was walking down the hallway, and they had made the trade, and that was it. It's hard to, if you're a Cardinal fan, that's hard to swallow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are moments like that, you know, throughout Cardinal history, the what if of Cardinal history would be fascinating, you know.
Oh, man.
A lot of those where, like, what if this guy had remained? What if, you know, what if this manager had remained? What if, you know, what if this player had come at a different time? Or what if they had kept Steve Carlton?
So all this stuff is, and we're going to wrap it up here, in the book. And the book is 100 Things Cardinals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, written by Derek Gould. To give you an idea, it goes through the numbers, the Hall of Famers, Ricky Ankiel's second act, meet Fred Bird, Whitey Herzog, Glenn Brummer stealing, Tom Alston, the first African-American player that played for the Cardinals, Frankie Frisch.
Cool story there about how he's introduced.
Yes. I mean, you've really done some great digging on this. The train rescue of 1911. I mean, it goes on and on and on. You're to be congratulated on the book. I love it. I use it all the time. I read it all the time. It's enjoyable.
And if you have the previous copies like you have, and I'm flattered by how dog-eared your copy is, you know,
I read it. I do read a lot.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, I hope it could be a resource manual for some folks. The new one has obviously the modern stuff in there. You know, like a whole chapter on Yadier Molina, a whole chapter on Adam Wainwright, a whole chapter exploring the most recent manager and then the current manager and their backgrounds and how and what they share and
how about David Freese
and how different they are. That was actually I expanded on the David Freese, but I didn't just do modern stuff. I also went back and added I also went back with there, but I also went way back and I added some stuff about the 1880s and perhaps a championship that happened that the Cardinals don't claim and the internal wrestling match that they're going through, trying to figure out where that fits in their history and whether or not it should be a pennant that flies above Bush.
Where can fans get the book?
So fans can get the book, obviously, on Amazon or anywhere they get their books. It's also carried at many local bookstores, Barnes & Noble, saw at Left Bank Books. At Left Bank Books, I signed several copies of it. There is also copies at, you know, just a lot of the smaller bookstores, independent bookstores throughout. I'm also going to do a couple book signings too. Dan, at Left Bank Books on May 15th, I'll be talking about baseball. We'll do a Q&A and I'll sign books there. And then, of course, May 11th, at the Barnes & Noble in Fairview Heights, Illinois, I'll be there as well at 3 o'clock to sign books and answer questions about the Cardinals.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek, so much.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me.